This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
A reason to take heart.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Yes, there's plenty to fret about these days, but the U.S. economy is still hanging in there, according to the numbers. This morning, the government said GDP grew more than 1% in the first quarter. That's better than the first estimate of the GDP rate. A surprising growth in exports and consumer spending were behind it. Now back to the fretting. The Senate was hoping to pass a big housing bill before the July 4th weekend, but it's hit a snag. Steve Henn reports.
The housing bill is designed to help up to 400,000 Americans save their homes by encouraging lenders to write down some of their debt and move them into government-backed mortgages. The bill is so important that yesterday, Democrats' Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid threatened to cancel the Senate's planned vacation if it couldn't pass this bill first.
We're going to finish the housing bill, however long it takes us to do this. It may knock a few people out of parades on July 4th.
But Republican Senator John Ensign refused to let the bill move forward unless it included $6 billion in tax breaks for renewable energy. Both Ensign and Reid represent Nevada, which leads the nation in foreclosures. But the cost of the tax breaks was a deal breaker. By the end of the day, Senator Reid said it was unlikely the Senate would pass anything until late July. And by then, 250,000 more Americans will have lost their homes. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Bank stocks are getting an early beating this morning. Goldman Sachs predicted more write-downs and losses for the banks. Already, the Dow is down more than 1%, 135 points, to 11,676. The NASDAQ is down almost 2% to 2,357. The S&P 500 down a few points to 1,305. In Asia today, Japan's Nikkei lost value for the sixth day in a row. European shares are down almost 2% so far. Looks like Bud is going to say no to Stella. Today, Anheuser-Busch is expected to reject InBev's $46 billion buyout offer. Let's find out more about it from our European correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, why is the king of beer saying no?
The word is they feel the bid is too low, and what they're talking about is drawing up a big defense strategy, including the sale of non-core assets like the theme park business and the packaging businesses to raise billions of dollars. Some of that money could be paid then to Anheuser-Busch shareholders to convince them that this InBev bid is not worth pursuing.
Somehow I have a feeling that InBev is not going to sit by quietly with this rejection. They've sent several letters to Anheuser-Busch saying, you got to do this deal. What's InBev's situation here?
Well, yes, indeed. And the latest letter this week made it clear, we're not going away. InBev, analysts say, really does need this bid at a time when its main brand, Stella Artois, is experiencing some difficulty, particularly in the British market. It said sales have declined by 10% over the past year.
And for Anheuser-Busch, now it's talking about maybe a restructuring with selling Busch Gardens and that kind of stuff. What are analysts saying about Anheuser-Busch's position here?
Well, what analysts say is that many investors have expressed interest in this bid. It all probably comes down to price. The expectation here is that InBev will increase its offer from $65 to $70 a share, and that may well clinch the deal.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, June 26th on Marketplace.org. Just a few months ago, Congress updated fuel efficiency standards for cars and trucks. Remember this? The required miles per gallon hadn't been changed since the 70s. But with gas prices the way they are, the new standard seems outdated already. So Congress will take a look at it again today. Sarah Gardner has more.
35 miles per gallon by 2020. That's the new fleet-wide fuel efficiency standard for cars and light trucks. But that standard is based on gas price assumptions in the mid-$2 range. The Department of Transportation has the authority to go beyond the numbers set by Congress. Brendan Bell at the Union of Concerned Scientists says the agency should do just that.
We think that the Department of Transportation should give Americans the fuel economy that they need right now, and 40 miles per gallon by 2020 is very achievable.
Automakers say that's a stretch. Charles Torito is with the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers.
Fuel economy standards that were set last year as part of the Energy Independence and Security Act push the limits of what's technologically feasible.
DOT is not expected to exceed the 35-mile-per-gallon standard, but is likely to propose bigger efficiency gains by 2015 than Congress initially sought. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Interest rates on government-backed student loans are about to fall to 6% from 6.8%. Congress mandated the lower rates last fall. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but this is really only the beginning. Here's Nancy Marshall Genzer.
Next week's interest rate cut is the first of four that'll eventually chop rates for government-backed loans in half to 3.4%. Congress has also increased grants for needy students. A House committee even put together a snappy YouTube video explaining the new benefits.
Skyrocketing college costs leave many students feeling alone when trying to pay for school. Those lonely days are over.
So why isn't everybody happy?
We're really dealing with the symptom of the problem, which is the price of a college education.
That's Travis Rendell of Jobs for the Future. He says Congress has taken a good first step, but it's time to focus on tuition. Democratic Congressman George Miller of California is behind new legislation that would keep state tuitions down by encouraging states not to cut their education aid as federal aid increases.
We're trying to make sure that as we put more money into the system, that the states don't just simply jack up the cost of that education with tuition and fees.
Miller's bill would also set up a new website, making it easier for students to compare tuitions. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Yesterday, Hilton said it's planning to build 300 new hotels in Asia over the next decade, most of them in India and China. For the Olympics, posh hotels are sprouting up all over Beijing. It'll have 800 star-rated hotels by the time the games begin. But there's one problem: finding enough qualified employees to work at these fancy places. Lisa Chow explains from Beijing.
If you're Chinese and staying at a hotel, you probably don't expect much. That's because China still breaks some important rules when it comes to customer service. First, most people in the service industry don't really smile, and they usually don't see it as their job to solve customers' problems. Franco Io is general manager of the brand new JW Marriott in Beijing. He has this message for employees. Good manners are a good substitute for inexperience.
Policy, procedure, all the technical skills, they will come over time. We go in, first day. Hi, welcome, Ms. Chow. Welcome to the JW Marriott. And I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm smiling.
At an orientation, Io asks more than 60 new hotel staff to practice smiling at each other. They complied. Awkwardly.
Do you feel bad when you smile?
Dai Bing is an expert in tourism. He says Chinese people aren't used to showing affection.
When I was growing up, my parents, especially my dad, never hugged me. He never laughed with me. But I knew he loved me. I think this is a cultural difference between Chinese and Westerners.
He also points out that in China, there's no real financial incentive to be nice. People in the service industry don't get tipped, and they average less than $2,600 a year. But Franco Io says if you work hard, you can move up.
So I went from a doorman, got promoted, and become a bellman. From there, I became a night auditor, a front desk clerk.
Long story short, several promotions and 15 years later, Io became general manager. But his biggest challenge lies ahead, getting his staff of 1,000 young and inexperienced hotel employees ready for the Olympics. In Beijing, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
You probably heard John McCain's latest energy idea this week. Hold a contest to develop the car battery of the future. The winner would get $300 million from taxpayers. Time to visit with our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, what do you think of this idea?
I think it's a great idea. Reading the history books or the famous ones, you know, the British Longitude Prize for determining longitude at sea. That was a big deal in the 18th century. And the prize was over $2 million adjusted to current prices. So, and it worked. And there's a long history. Lindbergh, for example, you know, the solo flight from New York to Paris, that was the Orteig Prize, which about $291,000 in current dollars. So, you know what? There's a good history here. It's an intriguing idea. And, you know, maybe somebody will make a breakthrough.
Yeah, but Chris, isn't there enough incentive with energy prices the way they are to develop something that would probably make a lot of money on its own?
Well, you know, I think, and there is a sense, I was reading some of the commentary that, you know, this is kind of a game show mentality, you know, the price is right. I mean, this is the way we want to be going. And, you know, my response is it's capitalism. We've seen a revival in recent years of the prize. There's a foundation that offers up prizes. Google has its lunar landing prize. And there's more and more of them. And companies like Cisco will offer up prizes to their employees to try and get a breakthrough.
I guess the argument against it might be that this is $300 million that could be spent on something else, for example, cancer research, whereas these innovations, you know, if it is truly a free market, should happen on their own.
That's right. But you could also say the $300 million could go toward a bridge to nowhere, which I think was pretty much we're getting pretty close to the price there. It's simply adding to the toolkit. I mean, you have our patent system, you have our royalty system, you have peer review system. So there's lots of ways in our society that we encourage innovation. I just think that this is an intriguing addition to the toolkit, and it works under certain circumstances, and hopefully this is one of those times.
So when are you going to have your idea for the car battery ready?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out how you know, use a screwdriver, a hammer, and a nail. So, but once I get past that stage of life, I may be able to come up with something.
Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
I'm guessing you might have some thoughts on this. Share them with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.